This week's case in point from our friends at the Marshall Project illustrates how laws to protect prison guards may end up putting inmates in danger. Take the case of Army veteran Elliot Earl Williams, who died on the floor of his cell in the David L. Moss Detention Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. A slow, agonizing death documented on prison video. Williams was paralyzed with a broken neck. He's just one of many cases of improper treatment at the Tulsa County Detention Center, where at least 20 people have died inside the facility since 2010. Williams' case is finally being heard in court now. The sheriff, Stanley Gantz, has since resigned. Andrew Cohen, commentary editor at the Marshall Project for this week's Case in Point, says it illustrates a lot of the problems in corrections regulations. And Ziva Brandstetter, editor-in-chief of The Frontier, has been closely following this story and helped to bring it to light.
So Elliot Williams was a veteran who had no criminal record. He had a history of PTSD, mental illness, and had a sort of break when his wife became estranged from him. And so he got picked up by the police, transferred down to the Tulsa jail. And he was having a psychotic episode, started ramming his head into the metal door in the jail, and he eventually ended up breaking his neck. Paralysis set in within a period of roughly 24 hours. They moved him to what they call a medical cell. You know, I don't know why they call it that, because there's no actual medical care that was really given to him. And then he spent 5 days laying on the floor. They were tossing trays of food next to him. They were putting cups of water just out of reach. The jailers and the nurses all just decided that he was faking, malingering, as they call it. And so the video is basically that time condensed down to about 10 minutes. And it is, as a journalist, I've watched 4 or 5 executions, and this is one of the hardest things, you know, that I've ever seen really on video.
And what's the legal issue here?
Well, the legal issue, the law is designed to protect the status quo, to protect the guard in most circumstances in these close calls. And what you see on the tape and what the litigation that is now sort of hurtling towards trial tells us is that there was this deliberate indifference. That's the legal standard. Deliberate indifference on the part of officials was patent. It was from the moment he got in there and he was disbelieved by medical professionals, the fact that they ignored his pleas for help, to the fact that they didn't ensure that he had hydration. He died, coroner said, not just from his broken neck, but from dehydration. He wasn't being given water. So you add it all up, and it's no surprise that a judge, who, by the way, has been handling other problems of other inmates involved in the jail, said, no, I'm going to allow a jury to hear this. I think this is something that survives the typical pretrial motions that often kick out these cases.
When did you get wind that there was a pattern emanating from this facility, and who has been called to account? Who's actually paid the price for some of these lapses that you've reported?
Well, this is a jail where we've had roughly 20 or so inmate deaths in recent years. We've had episodes where nurses are falsifying, you know, medical records to pass inspections. They've had consultants that they've hired themselves that have come in and said, this is unacceptable medical care. So I'd always heard about the problems in the jail, the deaths in the jail, but it was hard to get your arms around a per capita number. How do you compare it? Is it worse than others? We got done with the sort of law enforcement corruption side of things at the sheriff's office. The sheriff got indicted and removed from office because of a wealthy friend of his that he allowed to sort of play cop, pay for play. And then I started seriously looking at all these outstanding civil rights lawsuits at the jail, and that's when I kind of put things together. One of the things our reporting shows is that the jail had a monitor who was supposed to be, you know, watchdogging their private medical provider, and she had never submitted any reports.
So, Andrew, what is the lesson here as we try to determine what should be the proper relationship between laws that protect correctional employees, laws that provide for a minimum of acceptable health care for inmates, particularly mental health care, and the standard protections of inmates that relate purely to criminality? It seems like those were completely out of balance here.
They're out of balance, John, and I think there's a couple of points to make. First of all, cases like this, jails like this, really have raised public awareness nationally to the problem of mentally ill people in jail. So many people cycle through jails. There is so little care, adequate care for them. This is a big problem, but more people, I think, are aware of it today than, say, 5 years ago. But the other thing to say, even now, the problems inside that jail aren't fully solved. And so this story is emblematic of a problem inside a jail in Tulsa. But the problem of treatment of mentally ill people, whether it's in Tulsa or anywhere else, is a big problem nationally. And I think that's why this particular man has become such a symbol.
Ziva Brandstetter, it sounds like this case was one, even in your experience, that really was emotionally wrenching.
Yeah, like I said, I've been reporting about the death penalty in Oklahoma for quite some time, including witnessing the botched execution we had several years ago. And, you know, it's hard to compare these episodes, but Elliot Williams' death haunts me. You know, watching that video haunts me. And I, as a reporter, am, you know, determined to sort of get to the bottom of what is going on, provide the policymakers with the information that they need. One thing that's interesting is our county just passed a tax to fund what they call mental health pods at this jail. They basically used the fact that they'd had all these deaths of mentally ill prisoners as a way to get more funding. So they've constructed four new pods that don't have things where prisoners can hang themselves. They haven't mentioned any plan to increase staff. So, you know, that's a concerning pattern under the new sheriff who, you know, replaced the old indicted sheriff.
Well, we may be revisiting this facility, if not this story. Ziva Brandstetter, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Ziva Brandstetter is editor-in-chief of The Frontier, and Andrew Cohen is commentary editor at The Marshall Project and author of Case in Point. Andrew, thanks for your guidance on this case as well.
My pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.